G'day, Money Miners. Welcome to, let me check the clock, 10th of May, the morning news show. We are going to go into Black Cat. Is it bad luck to talk about a black cat? We're about to find out. And we're also going to go into the tech resources, Glencore takeover side of things. The plot thickens, the story continues, and we've got the rocket scientists here to get right into it. Trav, JD, gentlemen, how are we this lovely cloudy day?
Hey, Matty. Mate, you said, is it going to be bad luck or good luck to talk about a black cat? Well, they've got the number 8 to the ticker. Isn't that normally a good luck sign, that one?
Lucky number 8? Lucky 88?
I always get so stumped when you see a number in a ticker. It's a very strange one to me.
Yeah, but they've all got them these days, don't they?
Must have run out of those.
LM8?
Yeah.
LM1? L1M?
The eight in the ticker is often indicative of a pretty substantial Chinese shareholder at some stage. They do like that number 8. But
is that right?
Yeah.
Fun facts with Trav. JD, how are you, Collar?
I'm doing well, mate. And yourself?
I'm sensational. Right, let's get into it. Black Cat, BC8 is the ticker. We're not sure if there's any Chinese investors in this or not, but they have put out their updated mineral resource estimate for Paulsens, the company maker for Northern Star. Mm-hmm. It comes across good. Like, first glance, boys, 994,000 ton, 10.1 grams for 322,000 ounces.
Jeez, interesting headline numbers.
First pass, you'd think that is a sensational resource.
Yeah. Yeah. Matty, you used to work there, didn't you? When was your first job out of uni?
First job. Old Stralo and Billy B give me my first gig at Paulsens.
What year was this?
End of 2010. So I got there 6 months before Northern Star took over as their own mining services. So Barminco were there. Northern Star had just bought the asset off Intrepid.
Gotcha.
For, thank God, pretty unreal story. I think it was the $40 million loan facility from InvestMet, which was Fodius and some other guy. And I think Northern Star were capped at $5 million when they did that deal to buy it for $40 million. So pretty phenomenal story. So, yeah.
You're right, it was a company maker, right?
Like absolute company maker.
And I guess the question that, you know, we have now is, can this asset be a company maker again, Matty?
Well, what do you think? First up, what's the goss on the street?
Mate, we're the finance guys, not the bloody miners. We don't know if it works or not. We just look at the cash flow.
Well, there's so many aspects to look into here. What you can read into the whole, I guess, sale process and what Northern Star did with the asset and offloaded it. If it is going to be a company maker, wouldn't it have been a further company maker for Northern Star? That's my first red flag.
Well, Northern Star might have the perspective that, you know, they're a really big company now. They're focused on higher margin operations. This is no longer a higher margin operation, but maybe it does, you know, fit better in the portfolio of a smaller company who's willing to produce at a lower margin and then attract investors that are more interested in that risk appetite. That could be one angle.
That is one angle. Another angle is they have drilled the living shit out of it and did not deem it a good for future prospect for the company. A repeat of the Paulsens ore body would be a sensational thing for any company. Northern Star would have minded if there was a repeat of the Paulsens ore body, but they didn't find it. And then that is one scenario or one thing that Black Cat are looking at that we'll go through. But the other one is hinging on these gabbro veins, which we will go into. And as I said, this 10.1 gram resource, once you put the practicalities onto it with dilution, minimum mining widths, she ain't 10 grams. Now, first I might give a bit of a history of Paulsens, what they mined, what these gabbro veins are. So,
yeah, and a bit more colour on how this came into Black Cat's hands as well. I think that's a good spot to sort of start.
Yeah, well, they purchased it in April 2022, looking at this. Mm-hmm. So, sure.
Yeah, April 2022. Yeah, that sounds right. Yep.
JD's giving me bloody death stares there. And
mate, you've done the research on this one.
Yeah, I know. It was like, that was a dark look there. This will not be edited, by the way. So $45 million. So it was 14.5 million payable upon completion. So they got $15 million that payable by 30th of June 2023, which is coming up. But Trav, you said
that's been split up. I think they've
renegotiated it, yeah. Renegotiated into three tranches. So $5 million coming out at 30th of June. 8.3 million shares went to Northern Star, which by all accounts they still have because they're escrowed to 30th of June 2023.
Yeah. So they have the potential to sell them.
Yeah. 2023, and $10 million in milestone payments. So $2.5 million for each of Coyote and Paulson's on the first 5,000 ounces, and then another $2.5 million on 50,000 ounces. So you could.
So it's an acquisition on an old asset that, you know, it wasn't a lot of upfront cash out the door. And obviously there were two assets, right? They picked up that Coyote as well. But they what they could do is it's a sort of deal where you could raise some money alongside it to spend in the ground and convince the market that you're going to, you know, drill and make money again on it in the future. So an interesting one because you're always a bit hesitant to pick up an old asset. Sometimes you're not sure what the rehab liabilities are going to be on it and you're not sure if the team's going to be able to make money on it. But Black Cat did this. It was pretty public that Northern Star were divesting them and they were the ones that ended up with them.
Now, the resource that they bought off Northern Star, so it was 231,000 ounces at 2.5 grams for Paulson's, but 241,000 of those ounces were in the open pit resource. Underground had 89,000. So the underground resource that they've reported today, 322,000 ounces. But so they've added 233,000 ounces. And a lot of that are in these Gabbro veins. So the Gabbro vein resource from time of acquisition, that was zero. So Northern Star weren't including that into their resource. Now that resource is 133,000 ounces at 9.2 grams.
Mate, what is a Gabbro vein?
Well, the Paulson's ore bodies that were mined, they were Voyager 1 and Voyager 2. From memory, I know Voyager 2 was the big extension where they remember Northern Star put out this 12,000 grams per ton drill hit. So that was in Voyager 2. I still remember it was in this big bold blue writing, had bloody Bill Beament written all over it. And anyway, so they were the money makers, and they were just this big massive chunk of quartz. And either side of it, you had an upper zone and a lower zone. So the upper zone. Now, I'm pretty sure I got this right. The upper zone was a lot thicker but lower grade, like big chunk of pyrite. And then the lower zone was a lot thinner but very, very high grade. So
can you put any sort of widths on that?
Oh, look, not for me. I think the upper zone could have been up to, like, you know, heading towards the 3-5 meters sort of thing, whereas then you go over to the lower zone and that was – sub 1 meter. Now, yep. I'm not 100% confident on that, but it's sort of, so they could mine, I'm not sure if they did it on every level, but you could mine them concurrently and blend it together to be a pretty steady feed of grade. So the high grade blended with the lower and it all. So that was the money maker for them. So, and the thing that the red flag for me, that the thing that sort of aggravated me a bit about the way that Black Cat are marketing this, they keep referencing the historical Paulson's production. Like, you know, they go through all the years of what they produced, like up to 100,000 ounces in 2014 and, you know, 80,000 ounces in 2016 and all the historic production. But it's irrelevant. It is irrelevant. All that load, unless they're going to find a repeat, it's all mined. It's completely irrelevant what they've mined to date from those Voyager loads to what Black Cat have there now. So I personally don't agree with that as a marketing strategy on all their announcements. It's completely irrelevant. So these Gabbro veins, and plenty of pictures on YouTube, as per usual, our bloody video editing has just taken a whole new step towards 5-star rating. These Gabbro veins are sitting adjacent in the footwall to the main ore body, which is a big stope void now, all mined out. And they're in between, like I think within 200 metres of it, like all in little splays. So when we say the footwall, like I know they were putting stockpiles in on the level and driving it on those gabbro veins. Stockpiles normally waste. They're like, well, we may as well chuck it on the gabbro vein. It all goes as ore. But
now, these gabbro veins, Matty, they're quite thin, aren't they?
Well, very thin. You look at the actual intercepts. So that they reported the other week. They've been on a big reporting play, Black Cat, with all this trying to pump.
Hey mate, I'll touch on the marketing.
You stay in your lane, mate.
Yeah. I did quote that from Trav. But you look at him, like there's a 3.4 metre hit, but look, 0.22 metres at 80 grams, 0.55 at 67, 0.3 at 51. So all these veins have always been there. They haven't found anything new. Northern Star drilled them. They tried to understand them and they didn't really do anything with them.
And you told us something pretty interesting this morning about how these ore bodies tend to sort of pinch and swell. That's the wording they kind of use.
Well, that's where the word spivvy comes in, isn't it, Trav?
Squibby. Is it squibby?
Squibby. Yeah. Spivvy. I think
spivvy is like, you know, a spivvy company. That tries to promote themselves. Squibby is the word that Blair Way taught us. That is a Ken Brinson word for pinching and swelling.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, and you look at these widths, like, you know, high grade, very, very thin. It doesn't give you any scope of the continuity. The actual, is that thickness uniform? Is it a continuous ore body that goes through?
And now, when it actually comes to mining them underground, it's pretty hard to sort of follow these things, isn't it?
Well, there's two aspects. There's the actual development of it when you're following it, and then there's the actual stope extraction, the bulk thing, what you're there for to make the money. So if you go into the actual development stage of it, you'll turn out you literally mine the access 90 perpendicular to where these veins are. You'll find where they are in the wall. It's like, right, we start there, and every 3 to 4 meters advance, depends on how big their cuts they're taking, the geologists give a direction on that vein. So each 4 meter chunk will follow that vein. So like, right, based on the last excavation, it looks like it's turning half a meter left, take that drive half a meter left, and you keep following that. The problem comes into the fact when they fault off, that means they literally get cut off and shifted, say, 3 meters right. When it gets pinches to nothing and stops, you're left in absolute bloody no man's land because you can't see where it is 5 metres in front of you. You can't see through the rock. So you would take either based on previous levels or any previous experience or a pure bloody thumb suck, you're like, we go half a metre left, half a metre right, and you try and find it again. That's where the continuity becomes an issue. And I am assuming that these skinny gabbro veins, I would find it very hard to believe that they are a continuous 0.2 to 0.5 metres going along the whole strike of that vein. So that there comes, and when you start losing it, you have to start stripping walls to go off in a new direction to try and find it again. That starts opening up the excavation underground, and that then becomes a big issue for when you're actually taking the stopes out. Now, this is this resource, and you can read on the announcement how these resources are calculated. So they've excluded anything within 7.5 metres of the decline. So that's saying that they can't take a stope out because it'll take out your critical infrastructure. And then they've taken not included within 5 metres of existing stopes, because if you mined a stope right next to it, the wall will just fall and you'll have a big bloody hole and it'll be an absolute disaster. But they apply MSO, mineable shape optimizers. So they've got a cutoff grade of 2.2. They wrap these shapes around the ore body that are deemed mineable. And from that, the resource gets calculated. So the 1.5 meter minimum mining width, which is what these shapes calculate, that dilution skin then gets removed, it says here. So it is reported as an undiluted model with dilution skins removed. So that 10.1 gram resource grade is just the vein. just the vine.
Right. So there's no consideration for the dilution you would actually experience if you tried to mine that.
And then, and we've talked about it before, you've got your planned dilution and your unplanned dilution. So you cannot mine something 30 centimetres wide. I think there's some mad Canadians that have tried to do it with all these sort of high flame torches and all this. But look, yet to be determined. And the fact that underground mining's been the same way for the last 40, 50
years. Yeah, you can mine
things
30 centimetres wide, mate. It's called drilling.
Yeah, you could just drill holes into it and catch the fines. There's one, mate. Geez, you might be onto something there. Who said bankers knew nothing about mining?
So the key takeaway there for people still following on, Matty, is that these...
Oh, they'll be bloody following on, mate. This is my day.
These grades that you see that companies put out in announcements, they're very hard to mine at those actual grades, and you should sort of take it with a pinch of salt that the company's actually going to extract ore at a grade that high.
Yeah, and you will extract the ounces. The ounces don't go away. The grade will go down, but the ounces still come out. It's the grade that it comes out, which then affects your mill throughput and your cost and your operating costs. So let's look at their announcement the other day. So let's take all those widths. So what have they got about? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12. They've got 12 intersections of these gabbro veins. So these are the highlights. So these are the best. These are the best intersections they've got. So there's the standout at 3.4 metres, so I will include that for this purpose. If you do a weighted average of all those 12 intercepts, the best intercepts there are, that gives you 0.6 metres at 24.7 grams of those brilliant hits, okay? But now to mine that 0.6 metres at 24 grams, there's two tracks you can go down. So how Northern Star did it, so they had 4.5 metre wide drives using twin boom jumbos. So 4.5 metres is as skinny as you can go with a twin boom. You might go smaller rails and everything. You might get down to 4 metres, but that's it. That's how they did it. Now, it might have even been 4.2 by 4.2, but you can, to get it thinner than that, you have to go to single boom jumbo. So that's what like Silver Lake do at Daisy Milano. And let's note that Les Davis and Paul Chapman that were ex-Silver Lake are non-executive directors and shareholders of Black Cat. So there is a bit of a synergy there. Now, you can use single booms. You can then get it down to 2.5 metres wide with single booms, still bolting with jumbos. You can even go down to 2 metres and bolt it with air legs, which is what Silver Lake were doing at Cockeyed Bob and Maxwell's.
Start to get a bit claustrophobic down there, huh?
Oh, yeah. You can literally just – well, you can't get a ute in there. When it's 2 metres wide, you can't even drive a ute in there. So, okay. Now, the benefit of going down to 1.5 metres is minimising the dilution, because you can then, so 1.5 metre wide stope in a 2.5 metre wide drive, you got less chance of it. It'll sort of naturally overbreak towards the actual drive width. So getting that minimum mining width down is the most important thing for these grades. So say they mined it with twin boom jumbos like Northern Star did. So that would mean you could take a minimum, a 3 metre wide stope in a 4.5 metre wide drive. That's the
0.6 metre wide ore body?
Yes. So for that zero, yeah. So you've got 600 mil of ore, you've got to take with a twin boom drive 2.5 to 3 metres, because if you take any skinnier.
To four times as much, essentially.
Yes. And that's just going to overbreak. So for a 3 metre minimum mining width, add 10% dilution on the outside. So 10% is probably it could be a lot higher when it's thinner. That 0.6 metres at 24.7 grams is now graded at 4.4 grams. So you've gone down sixfold.
Now that's the planned dilution.
Fivefold, sorry.
You're planning to take out.
Planned dilution plus 10% of unplanned dilution, which is always in the calculations. Okay, so now, say if they use single boom jumbos, they'll then go to a 1.5 metre wide stope. 2.5 metre wide drive, 1.5 metre wide stope. That 24.7 grams now goes down to 7.9 grams. Okay, so that is based off the best drill hits they've got. So 1.5 meter mining width, 7.9 grams. So
and this that, is also assuming that drill width is true width, right?
Yeah, a lot of their holes looked at, they were short length, like 0 to 70 meters. So the you would anticipate the shorter drill length, you'd be getting closer to a good mining width when you're drilling 300 to 400 and very far away from the ore body. And to note that we'll show a picture as well, the Paulsens ore body, if they are, the hardest thing about drilling it, it's got such a plunge on it. So that's why Northern Star put a lot of exploration drill drives in to get them further out, to get a better angle to drill these things. So the further the plunge, the further away you're intersecting an even worse a true width. So, but if you actually apply the resource grade, so the Gabbro resource grade is 133,000 ounces at 9.2 grams. Okay, so that's the resource grade that they've quoted for this. If you then say, right, use that same average mining, that average intercept width of 0.6 metres, a 1.5 metre stope at that width, at that resource grade is only 2.9 grams. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's I think that's a pretty good representation of what this could possibly be. If they use twin boob jumbos to get a better productivity, to get it out quicker, that 3 metre wide stope would be 1.6 grams. Mm.
So this company hasn't come out with a DFS or any sort of study of that nature, and it'd be, I think it'd be quite interesting to see what sort of parameters, what sort of modifying factors they put around this ore body.
Well, if you put out the reserves, do you have to factor in all of those things? Maybe?
Yes. Reserves are the mineable shapes.
The economically mineable part.
Economically mineable. And the ones they're going to take. So there's always that percentage of resource to reserve conversion. Yeah. But the hardest thing is, as I said, when you put this resource together, this does not take into account the continuity. So these hits, they could like join A to B when they leapfrog it or use whatever software, whatever method they're going to do, the kriging. That doesn't take into account the fact that it might get cut off. So, but in like a 100 metre section, that thing might cut off for 20 metres. So there's 20% of your resource gone because you've assumed that that was a continuous ore body. So if this thing's pinching, swelling, cutting off, pinching off to nothing. They don't know where they're going. They miss chunks.
What does that look like if you're on the jumbo and it's just the ore body vanishes? What do you do?
Oh, look, it doesn't faze me too much. I'm there just to bore holes and put bolts in. The geos get the they get a bit upset about it. So but no, it does affect me because what happens is when you lose it, as I said, you've got to come back, you've got to strip a wall, you've got to then remesh that wall, then you've got to drive off on that. So it slows down everything I'm doing, and it slows down the whole mine.
And the connotation that I immediately have, and it was similar to the conversation we had with Tony James at Galena when they start to have these issues of the ore body not reconciling, is that you're going to do a hell of a lot more grade control drilling and reconciling that all up. And that means the operating costs are going to go up eventually because you just have to be drilling that much more to make sure you're not wasting money for something that's not there.
And but something that is this thin and possibly not continuous, you can drill it at bloody, like you can't practically drill a bloody 10 meter spacing or on something like this. Like it costs a lot of money, but
yeah.
By the time you get in there, like, what are you going to stop? Like, if there's a 20-metre gap, you're going to keep going anyway. But at least the drilling does quantify how many actual, a better representation of how many ounces are actually there. So it for me, looking at this, the fact that Northern Star didn't choose to mine these Gabbro veins, Black Cat of using these Gabbro veins, this their first bit, we'll go into the Paulsens repeat, but they're using these as a, I guess, their platform to restart. And we'll talk about what the cost of restarting is. It comes across as a very, very high risk option because there's so many unknowns about the actual continuity of these things. And the Paulsens restart.
Is it the platform to restart or is it the platform to raise money?
Well, as I said, you've got $5 million coming out at the end of June.
we'll see.
Is that, and that'll get into your marketing, possibly, Trav. Well, and
foreshadowing.
They're hoping, and look, I hope, and everyone hopes, I'm sure every single ex-Northern Star person hopes, that they find this Paulsens repeat because these they're using the I guess the knowledge of the geology and everything to find it. Like they did the downhole electromagnetic survey, and we'll bring up the picture showing that there's this possibly this other gabbro unit, and they quoted 200 or 300 meters below the existing workings. Now Paulson's got down to close to 1,200 meters below the surface, which is considerably deep, and this is in the Pilbara near Paraburdoo.
It's so a bit sweaty down there, wouldn't
it? Very hot. Extremely, it's a very hot mine, and there. So you'd hope that Paulson's repeat doesn't start there. It's actually completely adjacent. They haven't found it. That's that. If they found something like that, that's got more chance of being a profitable company than trying to mine these gabbro veins. It's going to be hard work.
And Trev, at a sort of corporate level, have you sort of dug in a bit? What's going on? I think we could see from the last quarterly that they had still 16 million cash, and we flagged that they've got a few payments to come out.
What we do. They do, JD. I think even before I talk about the finance part, I think I actually just want to talk about, what's the track record of execution here? Because I look at this company over the last 3 years and they just seem like a confused company, and maybe that's an unfair characterization. They're welcome to disagree with that.
Because this wasn't always the plan. Like there was these Coyote and Kalgoorlie projects were going to be the next thing.
This is exactly my point, right? Like you go back to November 2020 and they put out a scoping study on the Cal East gold project. So they've got this, tenure in Kalgoorlie. They put out a scoping study. It was pretty underwhelming. We're talking like 40,000 ounces a year sort of thing. And it's a bunch of old pits that look hard work, right? And yet that was sort of, they were pretty like adamant in their marketing that they were going to be building a mill in 2021. That never happened. In 2022, during 2022, it was, that was when they actually put out a PFS, probably for the right thing. Like they probably made the right call, labor in Kalgoorlie just became atrocious. In the meantime though, they actually bought like these mills, right? They literally bought mills and sent them to Kalgoorlie, and of course got some footage of the mills coming in on the trucks, which I might touch on. A few months before that, June 2022, when the PFS came out, they actually acquired this Coyote and the Paulsons. And in that messaging, when they acquired these assets, they were actually talking about Coyote as being the first restart operation, not Paulsons. And now we're seeing everything Paulsons, Paulsons, Paulsons. So, in the space of 3 years, they've pivoted from which project is going to be first to production.
It's the same as well. It's thin as anything.
Yeah,
we've
gone from Kalgoorlie's near term production to Coyote's near term production to now Paulsons' near term production. And I just think the strategy and execution, it feels like a very confused company to me.
One thing I didn't talk about with the thin stuff is the fact that they could use air legging for this, but the mining rates are even slower than single boom for that. So
there you go.
That ties into that Coyote as well. So yeah, very, very thin ore bodies.
And then on the marketing side, JD and Maddie, we talked about the mills that they bought, and I think the money miners, they know my distaste for very promotional sort of stuff. And this isn't an overly promotional company, but it is across the line of being a bit too promotional for my liking. And what am I talking about when I say that? Well, my promo detector goes off when I see photos of a truck hauling a mill to site. I'm yet to see a gold producer or a gold developer that doesn't show photos of the truck hauling the mill to site. It's always as important as getting a photo of the first gold bar, or photos of drill core and visible gold and drill results. They're all very very good ones. But worse than the drone footage is when you sort of see there's two trucks hauling two mills, and worse than that is when it's for a project that you're not even bloody building a mine at yet. So anyway, very confusing stuff. Another thing that gets my radar going is if you have three advanced gold projects, which they do, there's three advanced gold projects there. I can't understand how you can possibly have five market sensitive announcements for drilling hits on your 20-year-old mine, and that's all relating to just Paulsens. So it's like all in the space of 1 month. So in the last month, five market sensitive announcements on Paulsens of drilling hits. And I guess it's the counter argument is you're providing news flow to your investors, But I just look at it as like, really? Like, surely not. I think the market knows what is there. It's been in the public eyes for a long time. And surely there aren't five market-sensitive announcements in the space of 1 month there.
But they're talking about a potential restart this year, Trav, and you got the capital required for a mill restart. Now, we could hypothesize how much that would be, but that mill has been idle for a while in cyclone territory. I reckon there's tens of millions of dollars to go into getting that mill restarted.
For sure. Yeah, probably. Yeah, I'm pulling a thumbs up number, but I guess like 50 mil restart is probably fair, maybe more. And here's one to top it off, right, on the marketing front. So this is we've just talked about gold, right? So three gold projects: Coyote, Paulsens, and Cal East. And yet this company, 1 month ago, went to Singapore for the Future Facing Commodities Conference, a gold company at the Future Facing Commodities Conference, and they had a slide about the antimony at Paulsens there. So, I mean, again, I think that just speaks to that, like the confusion that must be at this company. I found that a bit strange, to be honest.
And are you seeing this radar going off, Trav, because is it leading towards trying to drive value in this share price to get a better bang for buck to fund this restart or to raise, get a better bang for buck for raising?
Probably. I mean, mate, everyone does that though. You try to, if you think your company's undervalued, you want it to be appropriately valued. But of course, you want less dilution in the process. And of course, they're going to have a capital requirement if they're serious about the restart. But you know, also when you look under the hood a bit, they've still got some money to come out the door to Northern Star for that acquisition. We said there was $15 million originally penned to go out the door 30 June this year. They renegotiated that to be $5 million with subsequent $5 million payments for the next 2 years after that as well. However, the subsequent ones accrue interest at 10% per annum. And then at the same time, you've got Northern Star's interest in their shares. You know, the voluntary escrow on them is coming off, and Northern Star have every right to do whatever they want with them. It's worth noting that when Northern Star and Saracen merged, Northern Star's strategy was to sell all of their minority interests. So, you know, they sold the Venturex position. They sold a bunch of positions in companies that were just minority interests that they weren't, they had no interest in holding anymore. So I can't imagine they have, you know, much of an ambition to hold Black Cat shares for a long period of time. So I just, yeah, I'm not very excited about the long-term prospects of this company.
Well, if you weigh up all the risks, as I said, the capital to restart, and then say that capital is sunk, it's executing on mining these narrow veins in parallel with spending the money on exploration to find this Paulsens repeat, which is their, that's the big thing about it. It's more of an exploration project to me, because I don't see much promise in mining these Gabbro veins, but finding another Paulsens repeat would be the big kicker.
Mm. Well, I mean, that's like a fair positioning of the company. I think, you know, if that's the strategy, I think you can actually convince the market to support you behind that, just so long as you haven't had a very confusing strategy in the lead up to it. You know, if you bought the assets and you came out and you said we're going, you know, we're going to try and explore it, you know, we're not going to rush back into production, then do that, and the market will be patient and support you along the way. But don't tell them that you're going to produce in 2 years' time, and otherwise the market will be getting grumpy like I am.
JD, what's your final evaluation on that after hearing me and Trav rant?
I think you guys hit the nail on the head. Sort of high risk, potentially high reward, but yeah, just sort of underline that high risk part of the potential investment for anyone out there.
And I think the message from this is, with these high grade resources that come out from companies to the investors, to the money miners out there, really consider what that high grade resource turns into once they excavate it, because that 10 grams at over a average half to 0.6 meter width ain't close to 10 grams at all.
Absolutely.
So it's something to very, very really consider. Right, let's get on to tech, the tech drama. We haven't covered them for a bit, have we?
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks since we've touched on this one.
Too busy on Silver Lake.
Yeah, it went quiet for a moment, but we'll sort of give a bit of a recap of what's going on. So Pierre Lassonde, the chair emeritus of Franco-Nevada, has announced his plans to with a consortium, a group of investors, to buy out the coal assets that Teck owns. So I think it's worth touching on why this matters for us in Australia. There's three main points that stand out to me, sort of resource nationalism you're seeing across the world, M&A heating up, and maybe it's sort of, put in brackets there, hostile M&A we're seeing more of. And lastly, Glencore operates 25 mines in Australia, so it is relevant to us. So I'll give a quick recap of the whole situation, how it's unfolded over the past couple of months. Teck announced plans to break up its company, to split out the met coal business from the metals co. And there were plans as a part of that to send cash from the coal businesses to the metals businesses for up to 6 years. Now, something else to bear in mind is that the Keevil family have super voting shares. So whatever happens, you need to win them over because they've got a lot of control over this company. So shareholders had a vote on this in late April, in amongst all the Glencore action, and they actually didn't go ahead with this. It got essentially voted down. They cancelled the vote shortly, only hours before it was meant to go ahead, because I think they could see the writing on the wall that the shareholders weren't going to vote it through. So Glencore swooped in. They offered to do a sort of takeover and spin-off of the coal assets that would include their thermal coal and oil trading division and make it a bit cleaner. It wouldn't involve any cash going from the coal assets to the metals co. So Glencore came back after Teck said no, and they tweaked the offer to have a bit more cash. Teck in turn said no again, and then, like I just touched on, the shareholder vote didn't go through. And that sort of leads us to where we are today, with Teck saying they're going to sort of pursue a bit more of a direct and simple separation. Pierre Lassonde and his group circling, potentially trying to snatch up those coal assets. And then Glencore just in the background, lurking around, potentially coming in with an improved offer. So one of the things that stood out was that there's been a lot of talk about how Teck is a great Canadian business, and a lot of people there don't want to sort of see this go through. I find this kind of interesting. Glencore employs 9,000 people in Canada, Teck 11,000. The proposed headquarters would be in Canada. That would be of the metals company and most likely the coal company as well. And it sort of brings about, it reminded me of the chat we had with Warren last week, talking about resource nationalism, about the rules that the Canadian government has put in place. He was
big on, yeah, speaking about Canadian government overreach in the way that they look at their mining assets, to the extent where they're sort of having some overreach on just Canadian listed companies where their project is overseas.
Yeah, so three separate Chinese investors in lithium assets in Canada recently got forced to sell down their investments. That was by the Ottawa government in Canada. And we also saw Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, say that any potential deal would have to have sort of a rigorous process to win government approval, which is, it's quite interesting. So moving on to what I'd said about those super voting shares, Norman Keevil, this sort of split class structure that you see with tech companies where certain shares have much more of a voting control. Similar in economic sense.
Google, it's like Alphabet, A, B, and C.
Exactly. Shares, that's right. Yeah. So Norman Keevil has said he would likely side with what the majority of shareholders at Teck want, but he clearly does need to be sort of won over on any sort of plans. And Glencore threatened to go direct to shareholders if they weren't getting enough traction with management. And I think that's something we've seen kind of recently, haven't we, with Silver Lake. One other thing that stood out to me was that three execs or people part of the management team, this includes the CEO, exercised and sold options this week, totaling over $11 million.
So selling shares at the same time as he's trying to articulate that it's valued higher.
100%. He's saying that Glencore materially undervalues the company, and he's just gone and sold over $5 million worth of stock.
Wow.
So that doesn't totally stack up in my eyes. It'd be interesting to see how he kind of justifies that.
Don't look at the words, mate. Look at the actions.
100%. The other question that sort of springs to mind is, or that I'd like to just sort of discuss with the money miners and you guys, is how we sort of see these companies spinning off these coal assets. Glencore have been pretty fierce in their defense for a long time now that they weren't going to do it, that the assets would just go into the hands of other companies or perhaps private companies, and you wouldn't hear about it. You wouldn't have the same ESG scrutiny that Glencore would put on it, not that they're famed for their ESG compliance.
Yeah, mate, I think this is something that is worth talking about. Absolutely. Like, we've seen the ESG strategies of the BHBs, the South 32s, and all of those sort of companies of the world. Their ESG policy is divest their coal assets. It's as simple as that. If it's not in their portfolio, it's not their problem, because then they still meet all of the investment mandates of all of the funds that are still able to invest in them.
Yeah, that's the key bit. It's not necessarily what management wants to do. It's what the shareholder pressure is sort of forcing them to do, isn't it?
And what does that actually end up doing? It creates a market for these assets to just end up in private hands, where you have a completely different level of scrutiny into the actual environmental outcomes that occur at these assets. So sure, it does push up the cost of capital for coal assets, but in the process, I mean, I'm sure there's just so many less eyes able to look at what's going on there. So if there are legitimate concerns, it's tucked away in hiding.
Yeah, and it's intriguing as it relates to tech because of those initial plans to send cash for roughly 6 years. There were various plans, but to send cash flow from the coal assets to the Metals Co for 6 years to fund the metals operations. So where is tech going to get the money to fund all these things? It's a sort of interesting dynamic.
Do you think that all coal assets in the future will just be all privatized globally for this purpose? They won't be on public markets?
That could be something we see down the track. It's still a while away. There's still a number of companies listed that are coal miners, but obviously they're doing lots of buybacks that we discussed when we spoke about Yancoal a couple of weeks back. So I think I'll just finish on a quote that I read from Barrick Gold boss Mark Bristow. Glencore's aggressive bid for tech suggests that miners haven't invested enough in the future and are taking urgent steps to buy existing mines rather than go through the painstaking process of developing new ones. So that's a sort of interesting quote from a guy at the top of the industry that kind of summarises where we're at the moment.
Right, get on the recap, boys, and then a bit of awkward chit-chat to keep JD on the line after that. Now, Yara Capital up their position in 29 Metals to 11% shareholding. So the Melbourne fundies into the rocks. The East State coming over to the hot air of the West Coast, even though they've got Capricorn.
No, they've probably just got a view on the copper market. They don't know much about rocks, mate.
There you go.
Yeah, that's sorted. Something a bit more for these personalities to...
Personalities. Yeah, shout out to the Chanticleer podcast. Remelius up to 76% shareholder of Breaker. Liontown have awarded the open pit mining contract to Iron Mine Contracting, so $240 million over 3 years. Now we're obviously still waiting keenly for the underground mining contract for Liontown, which is going to be one of the biggest in Australia, I would imagine. Absolutely huge job. I think they put their numbers in the other week, so it could be another few months away before they do the back and forth wheeling and dealing. Kingsgate Consolidated, they've said that after less than 2 months, production at plant number two is running above nameplate as operation at their Chatree gold mine in Thailand ramps up again. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Hooteroo.
Hooteroo. JD's got the headphones off already. Come on, JD. You sure you don't want to have a little chat? When are we going to do like a bit of a blasé Friday talk a bit of smack podcast?
Maybe on a Friday.
Hooteroo.
Trav Stone. I'm even wondering what I'm going to say.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation, or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation, and needs.